This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Conflict in life happens whether it's at work or in our personal relationships, so how do you keep an everyday disagreement from turning into a full-blown argument or even something that could be dangerous? This afternoon, we'll learn about communication methods for diffusing tense situations. But first, the Archdiocese of Cincinnati is moving almost 200 years of church history into a newly renovated building downtown. Many of the items, ranging from historical books and liturgical documents to ornate chalices, ceremonial vestments, and the relics of past popes and bishops, haven't been seen in decades. Now they'll be stored and cataloged in what will become the Chancery Archive, and they'll be available for scholars to study. Richard Hamilton, technical consultant and acting archivist for the Archdiocese of Cincinnati, joins us to discuss the archive and the critical task of cataloging and preserving such a huge and important collection. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Richard, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mark. It's my pleasure to be here.
We talk about this being almost two centuries of church history. Can you paint a picture for me of just how vast this collection is and how important it is?
Of course. The Archdiocese of Cincinnati dates back to 1821. Actually, it was the Diocese of Cincinnati at the time. Bishop Fenwick rode up here on his horse from Bardstown, Kentucky, and established this diocese. The original area was essentially all of Ohio, Indiana, Michigan. It was a huge territory for one man to cover. And we've been collecting things since then. So I've got papers from the various archbishops dating back to him. I've got various kinds of historical artifacts, books, and some liturgical items, a couple of actual second-class relics from Pope Pius X, St. Pius X. We have architectural drawings, 1,100 rolls of drawings. I've got some artwork, photographs. Encompasses a lot of different media and a lot of information.
The architectural drawings, are those of the various churches in the archdiocese?
Yes, they are. Various facilities. They could be churches, they could be schools, they could be rectories, different kinds of buildings that were used at the churches. One of the interesting things about that particular collection is some of those buildings don't exist anymore, and so the drawings are all we have.
Any idea how many items will be in the archive? Is it possible to even know?
That's impossible to know. I have 4,000 boxes of
wow.
things, plus a lot of other things that can't be boxed, and there's a lot of materials.
So 4,000 boxes, how much progress have you made on those boxes?
Well, it's not that I took this on in a total state of disarray. A lot of work had been done. But trying to reimagine how this is going to be used and how it's going to be available and how it should be stored and cataloged is a major undertaking and will take years. I've just scratched the surface.
Wow. Why did the Archdiocese decide to create the Chancery Archive?
Well, the Chancery Archive has been in existence. I mean, this is not a new institution. In fact, it's required by canon law, by church law.
Mm-hmm.
So the Chancery Archive is not new. If you mean why did we decide to build a new
building?
Take
this next step.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, that's an easy question to answer. When I was brought in 2 years ago, I was given some very specific things to accomplish. And the Archbishop had mentioned a couple of things that were important to him. He wanted to locate the archives in a building that we owned or could purchase because we've been leasing space. He wanted it close to the main office. He wanted the collection more accessible and more usable, and he wanted the new facility to be beautiful. So that's very broad. The sort of steps that I was asked to take was to, first of all, determine a location, and I retained a structural engineer. We looked at some buildings together because, this collection is extremely heavy. There's floor loading limits and so forth to be considered. After we located a building, hire an architect and sort of jointly design the space, hire a construction firm, get the space actually renovated and supervise all of this essentially, ready the collection for move because it was not in a condition where it could be readily moved, and then actually effect a move. And then we embark on a project to achieve a finer level of organization and cataloging.
Where exactly is this located?
The new facility will be at 25 East 8th Street, which is directly across from the public library and directly adjacent to St. Louis Church. It's a beautiful residential building from the 1850s, and so we are putting historical materials into a historical building, which I think is very interesting.
So the building's about 164 years old, and if I'm not mistaken, it was once owned by the Literary Club of Cincinnati.
It was. They weren't the original owners, but they had purchased it from the original owners and made extensive modifications. They were there from 1896 to 1933, I believe. They're still in existence. They're down on 4th Street, but they made a lot of changes to the building. They added a beautiful skylight and did a lot of things that are beautiful.
So they made a lot of changes. What modifications have been made so it can hold all these valuable documents now?
Well, that of course is that there's two challenges. One is the space that we're moving into is physically much smaller than the space that we're in now. We've got 10,000 square feet now, and we're moving into 3,500 square feet. And the way this is possible is that instead of using standard shelving units, we are using what's called high-density mobile range storage, where the storage units, the shelving actually rides on rails, and there's only one aisle. Everything is packed together, and you can create the aisle wherever you need it so you can access the materials. Now, obviously, the problem with that is that it requires a floor loading limit that's just incredible, much beyond what any normal building will accommodate, especially in a historical building. And when I took the structural engineer over there initially to look at the building, he said, there's no way you're going to put the collection in here in any kind of manner because the structure won't support it. And a week or so later, we were talking, and he said, you know, if we filled the basement full of cement, you could put anything you wanted in there. So that is exactly what we did.
So some major structure upgrades.
Yes.
What about climate control? Have you had to change the way that operates in the building?
Yes, of course. We have specialized equipment in the stacks area that controls the temperature and the humidity very closely. And we also have a specialized dry fire suppression system in there.
Now, since the Archdiocese already owns the building where the archive is going, is this going to end up being a cost saver in the long run for the Archdiocese?
Absolutely. Part of the idea there, Mark, was when the Archbishop said he wanted it moved into a space that we owned is so that we could realize some savings over time. So this building will pay for itself and will save the Archdiocese money.
Now, these records and all these documents and relics, they've all been warehoused for all these years, right?
Yes.
Why haven't they been out in public prior to this project?
Well, they've always been available to scholars. It's just not very accessible. It has not been very accessible. And, you know, it's hard for me to look back and say why that happened that way. But sometimes you put these something like an archive in the space you have available. It was at the Athenaeum for a long time in a couple of classrooms in the basement, literally. And then it's been in the present location for about 12 years now.
What's this job been like for you, Richard, as you catalog and you preserve all these things? This has to be fascinating work.
It absolutely is. And the temptation, of course, is to start digging through things and looking at things and never actually get anything done. But I discover new treasures every day, honestly, and it's a fascinating process. I'm the kind of person who is, my background is all science, mathematics, computing, and so forth, but I'm the type of person that is interested in absolutely everything. And so this process of going through these articles and learning about them and and trying to devise appropriate ways to catalog them and so forth has been fascinating.
So if you're a detailed-oriented person, this is the perfect job for you,
yes,
right?
That's correct. If not, you would go crazy.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation with Richard Hamilton, who is the acting archivist for the Archdiocese of Cincinnati. And let's talk with Pat in White Oak. Good afternoon, Pat. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Yes. Richard, are you from Cincinnati?
I am, actually.
Oh, okay, because I visited the office on 8th Street a few years ago, and I'm interested in a larger subject than genealogy. I'm trying to look into the history of the Irish in Cincinnati, and it's tied in very closely with the church. As a matter of fact, there's two or three churches in particular that I'm thinking of that are long gone now. And so the question is, what would you have from those churches?
Yes, of course. There's a long history of both the Irish folks and the German folks in the Catholic Church here in Cincinnati. And I do have one of our collections that is often requested is what's called the parish histories. And information about those closed parishes is probably available. And I've also got what's called the deceased clergy file. And so if we can locate some of the clergy that was there, there are various ways that we could go about locating information. The Catholic Telegraph, the magazine that's been in print since 1831, it was started by Bishop Fenwick, and we have the entire run of it, would probably have information. So there's a lot of things there.
Thanks very much for the question, Pat. We appreciate it. Jeremy sent us an email, Richard, and he wanted to know if people would be able to look at church baptism and marriage registers from defunct parishes from the 1800s.
The answer to Jeremy is no, not directly. The one thing that's important to understand is that the Chancery Archive is not a public institution. It's a private institution. And we take the privacy of the people that are recorded in what's called the sacramental records very seriously. The sacramental records would include baptisms, confirmation, marriage, and death records. But they're not easily segregated one from another. And so for privacy reasons, that kind of work would have to be done by an archive staff member. That's an open question. We have done genealogy work in the past. We have not in the past 2 years just because of the press of matters in actually accomplishing the renovation and move. But that question is on the table now, whether if we will be able to offer that service in the future.
We'll continue our conversation after the break, and later in the show, we'll explore communication techniques that can help us sidestep conflict. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guest this afternoon is Richard Hamilton, who's cataloging and preserving almost two centuries of church history and what will be the new home of the Chancery Archive in Cincinnati. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7155. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Richard, what is going to happen after this move is complete?
Mark, thank you for that question. I think as much work as has happened over the past few years that I've described to you, the work is actually just beginning once we move. Because now the challenge is to make the collection more accessible, which, if you recall, was one of the Archbishop's directives. And so that involves a couple of things. First of all, it involves creating a thorough catalog. There are some partial catalogs now. There are some legacy materials that need to be checked. But creating a full catalog is quite a challenge. And this happens in stages because if you and actually a catalog, again, is required by canon law. But if you dug in and took the first box out and pulled the first folder out and cataloged it and then went to the second folder, it would be another five generations of archivists before we got this project finished. So I look at this as an iterative sort of process where first I've started creating already what I call a container-level catalog, which would be a box or whatever the artifact might be in. And then once you have that done, you may have, you know, 5,000 to 10,000 items in your catalog. After that's finished, you can go to a finer level of resolution on that. So it's a step-by-step process. The other thing that is very important moving forward, I think, is imaging the collection, digitally imaging the collection. And this is for a couple of important reasons. One is preservation. No matter how well you design a facility or a suppression system or an intrusion system, things can happen. And so if you digitally image everything that you have, you've at least preserved the information. It also would improve accessibility in the sense that if you have any documents, especially type documents, those can be OCR'd, turned into text, full text search capability, and so forth. So you can increase the accessibility while lowering the how much handling is done of the materials because you have images on a large computer screen that could be accessed. The other thing, though, is a very practical matter, which is control of the size of the collection, because you can't continue accumulating materials for another 200 years and expect to have a place to put them. So, you know, some articles, say a handwritten letter from an archbishop, has intrinsic value. The object does. Those would be preserved forever. But in some cases, it's simply a matter of information, in which case you could scan that document and then it could be shredded, disposed of. So you control the size of the collection.
How big of a staff do you have doing this project?
You're looking at the staff.
Wow, that's a daunting task, isn't it?
Well, I have some volunteers, and I've got one person that is working part time for me. So staffing is an issue moving forward that we have to resolve.
Richard, what is to your knowledge, what's the oldest item that's in the archive?
Well, the easy answer is 1821, because that's when the diocese first was established. But I've got some older items that came to us by other means. I would have a hard time putting a date on that without doing a little bit of research, but certainly back to 1821.
Tell me about some of the relics and some of the belongings of popes that are on display at the archive.
Yes, we have a couple of things like that. And the vestments are a very interesting part of the collection. I've got a beautiful vestment from Bishop Fenwick, which was crafted in Europe somewhere and he brought back here. That kind of thing is quite interesting. We have some liturgical implements that would be used during the service, like chalices and that sort of thing. The valuable ones are actually kept at a safe at another location. There are what I'll say, rather random artifacts. I have a walking stick that belonged to Pope Pius X, of course now St. Pius X, making that a Second Order relic. And a couple of other items like that came from outside the archdiocese, which are important historically. They're not important necessarily for our archdiocese here.
What have been some of the challenges that you faced in cataloging and preserving all these items? Did that include like a language barrier, since a lot of the documents are written in Latin?
Yes. Well, I've got things in Latin, German, French, and English. Now, I can already manage German. If I don't have a skill that I need, I will find a way to acquire it. So when I realized how much I had in Latin, I went to the Athenaeum and simply asked the rector if I could take a Latin class. And so there I was, myself and 8 seminarians studying Latin together. And I'm not going to claim that I'm fluent in Latin, but I can make my way around, and that's all I needed.
Well, what's been the most surprising thing to you as you've worked on this project?
Surprising in what way? An object or?
It could be an object, something that you learned that you weren't expecting, something you discovered as you were cataloging items that just caught you by shock and surprise.
Well, there was something that happened fairly recently that was quite interesting. I was contacted by a woman that lives in the western part of the country, and her question was about a Cree Native American, which apparently he died at the Cincinnati Zoo. And I got the request, and I thought, I'm not sure what I have in my collection that might help this woman. But determined to find out, I did some digging and found a couple of articles about this very thing in the Catholic Telegraph, which is where I often start in terms of just trying to find out some basic information. And it turns out that the Cree Native Americans, in fact, had a what I'll call an anthropological exhibit at the Cincinnati Zoo in 1896. And they actually built a small village there and lived at the zoo.
Fascinating.
Well, the connection turned out to be apparently the man had contracted a terminal disease, and he was dying. And the Native Americans that were there at the zoo were being evangelized by the Jesuits, and he requested to be brought into the Catholic Church. And so a priest from St. Xavier Church downtown went to the zoo, and baptized the man, confirmed him, gave him First Communion, gave him last rites, and he died that day. I found the man's baptismal record in our archives.
That's amazing. Richard, we have to bring the conversation to a close. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but thank you for joining me this afternoon.
It has been my pleasure, Mark. Thank you so much for this opportunity to talk about the Chancery Archives.
Richard Hamilton, technical consultant and acting archivist for the Archdiocese of Cincinnati. After the break, a look at verbal defense. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.